Okay, so I gave this year a few years ago in Princeton. I made fun of it, so I'm going to give it again. So the majority of this week's Parashat Hazinu is the Shira of Moshe. Right? It's Moshe's final song. Hashem at the end of Vayelech tells Moshe that the Jews are going to sin after he dies, and he wants them to leave them. He wants Moshe to leave them with a parting message that will perhaps preempt their inevitable spiral of sin. And that's the majority of the parsha. And then at the end, after Moshe has given his final rousing speech, his final rousing song, and his last ditch attempt at inspiring the people, literally the last thing we hear before Hashem says, okay, that's it. You've said your last speech, it's time to die. And then Moshe speaks yet one more time, but this time it's his, you know, deathbed scene. But before his deathbed scene, he has one last thing to say after the song, and that's these two psukim over here, number one. So he said to the Jews, take to heart all the words which I've warned you this day, enjoin them on your children, that they may observe faithfully all the terms of the Torah. And then he says, for this is not empty. Here they translate as trifling, JPS. But Reik literally means empty. Instead, it's your life, and through this you'll live on this land which I'm giving you now as you're crossing over to the Arden. Right? This is the last thing. Keep the Torah, because ki lo davar reik hu mikem ki hu chayich. Now, when you read that pasuk, it sounds very nice, and it sounds like a great final inspirational thing for Moshe to say, look, I've taught you this whole Torah, and it's valuable, it's important. But he doesn't tell them why it's important. And he just says, it's not unimportant, right? It's not empty, it's something. It is your life, and therefore you should keep it. But what's really interesting, as I said about it, is that Moshe doesn't tell them why it is valuable. What is it about the Torah? He just tells them it's not empty, it's valuable, it's your life, but he doesn't explain to them what the value of the Torah is. And therefore, this pasuk has become a jumping off point for all the Mefarshim to sort of find their voice or read their philosophy into this pasuk. Because the Torah is asking you for it, right? It's not empty, but now you got to figure out, so then what is it, right? What is its value? It's really valuable, but what is it? So what I want to try to do is show how the Mefarshim took this pasuk apart, and how you can see, through just the interpretation of these few words, the different worldviews that, over the hundreds of years that we'll look at, or thousands really, that the Mefarshim had, as to what really, when I asked you, when we boiled down the Torah, what is its point? So I asked you, right? So if you just wanted to translate those words, kilo, davarek, mikem, kiu, chayechem, it's not empty, it's your life. And I asked you, okay, so then why is it valuable? What is it? What do those words actually mean? What would you say?
Why is the Torah valuable?
Yeah, right? That's Moshe's last thing he says. Kilo, davarek, mikem, it's not empty, it is your life. What does that mean? Why is it your life? Why is it not empty? What is its value? He doesn't say, he just says. How do you read those words?
Essential to your life?
In what
way?
How
you live your life?
In what way? Right, that's what it leaves empty. But let's push it.
Right? It's how to treat your fellow man.
Good. So one possibility is to say, look, kilo davarei kumikem, kiu chayechem. What is the most valuable thing in life? Ethics.
Right? How you treat your fellow
person. Right, how you treat your fellow person. Therefore, the Torah is not rape. It gives you life, because it teaches you how to treat other people, right? But what's interesting about that, right? What's interesting about that is that the Torah doesn't tell you what it's valuable, because we have an assumption that treating other people is valuable. So then we say, oh, well, if the Torah is valued, that must be its value, right? But, right, the Torah actually left it blank, right? And we just put that in, right? You said, so let's push what you said. What do you say?
Right.
Yeah.
That's different.
What? Right, so Derech Eretz, right?
Torah.
For sure, right? Derech Eretz. But before that, you said something even just more generic.
I said that it's the way we live our life.
It's the way we live our life. Right? One way of just living is, look, I don't know, it's not rigged, it's not empty, because, yeah, it's the way you're supposed to live your life. Or, let's see, someone first would say, it's the way you live your life if you want reward. Right? It's not empty, but the point of the Torah is that you get rewarded, so it's not empty, because it has reward. It'll be what gives you the rights to live in the land. Right? That would be a very generic way. How else would you take it?
Well, you have to earn it. You have to treat yourself a little bit. If you don't live the life, then you're finished. God's not going to be happy with you.
Right, so again, so that's, now that's mixing too, right? One is that it's the way that God will be happy with you, right? It's what you need for, Lamont, as the end of the pasuk says, that you live in the land, so that God gives you the rights, but also, it contains values. But what else is, right, where, right? If, well, let's put it this way, if I went to an H seminar, right? No, I'm not getting political. I'm just going to say, if I went to an H seminar, what would they probably tell me? Because this is what they say. And there's something behind it. I'm not going to knock anything. I want to point out.
Torah is Hashem.
So they might say Torah is Hashem, but when they want to wow people, what do they say? What's one of their big things?
First fire.
They talk about Torah codes, right?
Torah codes.
You ever heard them, right? If you go through it, right? They're very into Torah codes because it inspires people, right? But why?
Age, right here.
Okay.
He's for this first year.
You know, I'm not saying this enough. Like, my cousin is director of Age Israel. I have no, you know. But what's when you go to an Age seminar, they try to inspire people. And they say you can find all of history hidden in the Torah codes. What's the implicit logic of that argument? Right, like, take it or leave it. But what's the implicit logic of the argument that there's a value to finding all of history hidden? It's not an ethical thing, right? It doesn't help you. What does it help? Why is it important for them to show?
Torah is alive.
And
what? Gives you a drive.
What?
I think every religion gives you a drive to live.
Okay, so that, right, so that's another aspect of it, right? Kiyu chayechem simply is not valueless, it gives you a reason to live. But like, just on this point, right, why do people like Torah codes? And we'll see in a
moment.
Yeah, right? Meaning they see and it's proof.
It's not blind faith.
Correct. Meaning, but what are they saying? They're saying it's not empty. Meaning, this statement isn't about the values you're going to learn about it. It's an attempt to impress you. Right? There's so much wisdom hidden in the Torah, things that you don't even know about, that maybe aren't relevant to your life per se. Right? Why do I need to know all of history? Right? Post factum. But when you say, well, I could find all of history there, there's a wow factor. It's just like, look, God is so great that he hid all of history there. Now, when we talk about ethical values in the Torah, that's saying it's not empty because it gives you something to do. Right? It gives you a way of life. But some people will say, well, I want more than that. I want the Torah to be the proof of God's wisdom in this world. So people who are into Torah codes, and we'll see the medieval equivalent of that in a minute, will say it's more than that. It's not. There's nothing in it which doesn't tell you something beyond what you could imagine. And like I said, what's interesting about this pasuk is that the Torah never tells you. It just says it's not empty. It's your life. But then figuring out, well, what is that value, requires you to ask, well, what do I want the Torah to fill in? Now, you also have this slight linguistic problem, which is kilo davareku mikan. It's not empty. Now, what is it there for? Right? Because these aren't opposites. Right? Really, in English, it should have said, if not empty, it's full. Right? But it doesn't say that. It says, it's not empty, it's your life. So, that leaves you with an open question.
It fills your life.
Right? So, one possibility is to say that kihu chayechem is just another way of saying it fills your life. Alternatively, right, you still have to say, it's not empty, but now there's two possibilities. Either it is not empty, but not full, or it is not empty, but it's complete, right? The exact opposite. Those are two radically different interpretations, right? One says, Torah must include all. The other one simply says, Torah must include a lot. Right? It's not empty, it's valuable, but it doesn't preclude the possibility that other things have value. And again, this pasuk doesn't tell you. It leaves it open. It says, "Kilo davareku mikem," it's your life, but it doesn't tell you if it's male, right? If it's complete. And these two questions, right? What is its value, and how complete is that value? The person struggle with. And I said, try to extrapolate a world value out of this single puzzle. So, if you go through, I gave you just sort of a swath of history here. First source I gave you is Targum Yonatan. So, Targum Yonatan is not actually Targum Yonatan. There on Navi we have Targum Yonatan, which is actually Yonatan ben Uziel, who is a Tana, so that's very, very early, the second third century. Targum Yonatan on Chumash is not actually Yonatan ben Uziel. It can't be. The Gemara makes it very clear that Targum Yonatan, that Yonatan only wrote on Navi. He didn't write on Chumash. It's some compilation of a Targum from Israel and some medieval works. But whatever exactly it is, Targum Yonatan translates it as follows. He says, Arum lit pitgam reka be'oraita. There is nothing vain, right? There is no vain word in the law, right? So he translates kilo dabareik not as it is not empty, but as there is nothing empty, right? Therefore, it's absolutely full. In what sense? He says, Elohein lida'avrin Allah arum hu'chayecha. So he makes an interesting move here. He says, it is not, there's nothing vain if it is your life. Meaning, it could be empty if you transgress it. And if you don't value the Torah, then it is empty to you. If you value the Torah, it will be valuable to you. It's not an objective statement. It's Moshe telling the Jews, look, you have an opportunity now to treat the Torah with the value it deserves. But if you don't, know that it will become valueless to you. Through this, by this word, you'll prolong your life. Around this land that you pass over the Jordan to inherit. So Targum Yonatan says something fascinating. He says, this isn't Moshe telling them that it has to have value. Right? Moshe's final thing to the Jews is that, final word to the Jews is, the Torah can have value if you look for it, if you care about it. But if you don't, it will indeed become valueless to you. Rabbeinu Bachaye says, generically, he says, look, you load up a rain from me, Kevin. The simplest understanding is simply that God didn't command anything from us. Yeah. So Rabbi Bahai says, look, I don't know what it means exactly. Moshe's final words to the Jews, he's not telling them why the Torah is valuable. He's telling them, right, so far you have some generics, right? You have these first generics. Targum Yonatan says, look, Moshe's last word to the Jewish people is, you have an opportunity to value something valuable. You don't want to? Don't. And then it'll become meaningless. But you have an opportunity here. I'm not going to tell you what that is, but it's found in the Torah. Rabbeinu Bachaye says, also generically, a little bit differently, he says, look, nothing God says is in vain. I'm not going to tell you why it's valuable, but it's not in vain. So spend time on it, take care of it. The Shalah, in number four, goes more in the direction that we raised before, of the ethical one. Right? He starts putting in values. And he says, no, it's not just that it's not empty. What's the point of life? The point of life at some level is to get along with each other. And if that's the case, and the Torah is valuable, it's not empty, because it'll give us life in a new country. Well, what do you need in a new country? Right? It's not just getting along with each other like one-on-one. What do you need in a new country? What? Language. And you need laws, right? You need not just like morality on the person, you know, individual basis, but you need a system that'll help everybody get along. Right? So he says, yeah, the Torah compares the statutes to the social laws. The message is that just as there are easily appreciated reasons for the social legislation of Torah, so we must believe the reason that underlying the Chukim are equally good. He says, look, the social laws in the Torah I get. Right? I understand. I look at the social laws, and anyone who cares about society will say, look, not killing, not stealing, all that is valuable. Moshe comes and says, not only is it valuable when you understand the Torah, but you think it's only valuable when you understand the immediate value of the Torah. Moshe comes and says, you know, there are things in life you don't understand. They're chukim. And as much value as you place in moral law, place in non-understandable religious law, in chukim. Said they're not rake. Right? They're not empty. They're not devoid of logic. On the contrary, if that is our impression, it proves that we are devoid of reason and good sense, or empty. In the same verse, the Mishpatim, social laws are compared to chukim, statutes, to make us appreciate that there are hidden meanings in these social laws which fail to meet the eye when we read them, and though we had understood their meaning, their total meaning. So he says two things. Right? One is, they're valuable because of the moral laws, but don't think that you understand even all the levels to the moral law. Right? Because you think, right, you say it's so easy, you get along. But it's very hard to get along. And there are a lot of levels to getting along. And the Torah gave you a whole system. And not only did it give you that, but it layered it. And there's things that you don't understand as chukim.
So why would you not understand? Why would you follow something that you don't understand?
You still do.
What?
We still do. There's a lot of things we don't know.
Correct.
I understand that, but why? Why wouldn't they make it? Why wouldn't they give up a rational answer for a rational human being?
So there's a few answers to the question. Right. One answer to the question is that there's a value to obedience. Right?
Obedience?
To God.
Yeah.
Right? The Rav, right, Soloveitchik had an interesting answer where he said it's more than that. The problem with a religion which is reducible to rationality is that it gives the possibility of people to rationalize even the evil. Right? Meaning, if you say the only thing that's valuable in life is that which you understand, then you give people the opening to say, well, I don't get this law. Like, I don't get why you can't kill. Right? You get, you know, he's writing post Holocaust, and he says, look, the Nazis said, right? I mean, what is he saying? If you say it's bad to kill because human beings are our equals, right? And we can't kill an equal. So then as soon as a culture comes around and says, well, no, human beings aren't your equals, or these human beings aren't, so then they can rationalize it away. So the Rav said, you can't have a system that has no element of chok, because if you have no chok, you have no notion of keeping something you don't understand, then you run the risk that people will rationalize away even the most obvious moral laws. Right? So the Torah hides a few chokim to teach you that, you know what? You have to keep things even when you understand.
But if you're not a learned person or a devout person, you can assume that. But if you're just studying the Torah for the first, whatever, 10 years, and you don't have an answer, that can push people the other way.
Right, so there's a mix, right? It's not like everything is taken on blind faith, right? The Rav said that's the wisdom of the mix.
There's not a real reason.
Right, so Kashrut's one of those interesting things because, right, it doesn't have an obvious reason, but at least 11 reasons I can think of offhand, right, have been given for it. Right, the Rambam says in the Enemah of Me'ilah that there's really two levels to it, right? There's one level at which we can speculate about reasons because that helps us deepen our connection to mitzvot. And then there's the... And that's fine, right? That's great. Trying to understand mitzvot as much as we can, that's great. The danger isn't there. The danger is when we assume we know the reasons so absolutely that we can then twist the laws. Right? So the Rambam says you should have a little bit of humility. You should try to understand mitzvot because it deepens your connection. But if you can't figure it out, don't worry about it. And even if you think you figured it out, don't be so confident that you figured it out that you'll start playing with the laws and say, you know what? In this case, the reason doesn't work. Right? So you're right, there's a mix, right? We do need to try to understand it at some level, or at least the majority of Rishonim thought that, but we can't reduce it to only what I understand because you give people the ability to rationalize it away.
So, you said you have several answers for Kashrut. What about the red heifer?
Right, so that's the one that, you know, the Gemara understands that there is no reason that's humanly accessible. And again, at some level, there has to be something. Right? There has to be something that we don't understand, you know, which is, or at least seems arbitrary, right? And there is something to that. It maintains the notion of law.
But even the rabbis can't come up with
that. Correct, and that's right. That's good, right? At some level, right? If at some level you always run the danger that the people who are the smartest, the people who are most involved in the legal system, will be the ones who twist it. Right? And at some level, you need something to prevent them from doing that. Right? I mean, you have this in the States all the time. Right? One of the biggest fears in the legal system is, you know, and you hear this, you know, now, right? Whenever you have a Supreme Court justice, not usually a conservative one, but whatever, right? The fear of legislating from the bench, right? Because if you have a judge who legislates from the bench, there's nothing to protect you from it, right? Because they're saying, you know what, I don't really care. I'm not really interpreting the law. I'm saying whatever I want, right? That hubris is very dangerous for a legal system. You need even the people at the very, very top to be reminded you don't know everything, right? Now, the Shalat assumes that whatever value is in the Torah is legislative, right? Is law, right? Moral law, ethical law, spiritual law. But the truth is, there's even more than that, right? You could say, why say that the Torah is limited to law, right? The Shalat is making an assumption. What is valuable in life? How you act, right? How you act. So he says, if what's valuable in life is how you act, so the Torah must tell you everything you need to know about how you act in a valuable way. But there are things in life that are important that aren't about how we act. There are things that are valuable because of what we know. Right? What we know. So I gave you here, instead of giving you the whole Rambam, I just gave you the summary from the translator, because it's shorter. But he notes that the Rambam adds not only, right, the Torah includes historical information. And when the Rambam, right, if you just read in 5, he says, in addition to the legislative contents, the Bible includes historical information. And Maimonides, in briefly reviewing the biblical narrative, shows that these are likewise intended to improve man's physical, moral, intellectual condition. It's not a vain thing for you, and it proves vain to anyone, and it is his own fault. But the Rambam expands it a little bit. He said, look, it's not everything needs to be legal value. Right, there are things that help us intellectually and morally and physically. So the Torah also includes historical information that helps us frame our historical experience, that helps us frame our spirituality. That's also valuable, right? So you have here so far, right, 3 levels, right? You have, or 4, right? You have Targum Yonatan, who says the Torah is valuable. That's Moshe saying, look, treat it as valuable, it'll be valuable. Rabbi Nobachia just says, look, the Torah is valuable for whatever reason. I'm not going to say why, but it's valuable. The Shalat says it's valuable because it teaches you what to do. The Rambam adds, you know what, it's valuable because it also teaches you how to think, right? To frame your experience. If you look at number 6, the Ketav HaKabbalah, Rabbi Yaakov Mecklenburg, he says, a Torah, einena la'adam kedavar mikre, it's not happenstance, avul davar atzmi, ba'adam, kmo shelo yitziyar adam zulat ha'chayim. He says, you know what it means when Moshe says it's not empty, it's your life. It's not just that it is valuable, it's not just that it could be valuable. It's that it is, right? It is what you can't imagine life without. And Moshe is telling you that it isn't just, it provides some or even a lot of information or experience or laws or legislation or guidance in life. What Moshe is saying is the Torah is that without which you could not exist. Right, which is yet another level, right? And if you know it, though, right, there's a subtle difference here, because now we've jumped. Right, Rabbi Nobachia said it is valuable. It's not empty, it's valuable. But he doesn't preclude the possibility that there's something else valuable outside of it. Ketav HaKabbalah doesn't deny that there's something valuable out of Torah, but he's pushed the Torah, right? It's not just something that has value, it's something that, without which you couldn't exist. Right, that's already one level up. Right, the Torah, in order for it to be valuable, it's not just that it has value, it is that without which you could not be. Right, that's an even more demanding definition. Reverse in 7 says, "Al pi zeh yesh lefareish gam et lashon reik mi." Right, how do you understand empty from? Hadavar reik me oto tochen. Right? Reik means empty from that content, and the content doesn't fill it. Meaning what? Zehu eifo perush kilo davar reiku mikem. Ein ze davar sh'atem inchem mimalim oto. She'ein atem nehavim et kol tofuno. It's not something, right? He says, you know what Moshe is telling the Jewish people? It's not something you fill, because you are not its essence. It is bigger than you. All of your existence is included in it, but right, not itself the other way around. Right, everything in Torah will have value for you, but that doesn't mean that you encapsulate the entirety of Torah. The Torah is bigger than you. Right? Everything in your life will be deepened by it, but you don't feel it's... You are not the sum total of the entire Torah. If you look at Rashi, Rashi number 8, Rashi gets two possibilities. He says at a lower level, if you want to look at it in English, he's, or, you know, it's not, well, yeah, but I have it in both here. It says, lo l'chinam atem yegeim b'bak, yarbe schar talubai. He said, the lowest level, it just means, look, it's not in vain that you work, you keep the Torah. There's reward in it. Kiru chayechem. Because it's your life. But then he pushes it. And he says, no, it's more than that. So far we said it has value, it adds value to your life, it's your whole life. But then he quotes Chazal, and he says, I think it's even more than that. Ein lecha davar rekan batorah. It's more than that. When I say it's not empty, I don't just mean the Torah as a whole isn't empty. I don't just mean that there's legal information. I don't mean it'll tell you everything you need to know about life. I don't just mean it'll give you a reason to live. Because even, let's say, someone, their life was guided by, I don't know, pick your book, right? Whatever it's going to be. Pick your self-help book, Harry Potter, I don't care, right? Harry Potter, right? That doesn't mean, even if you live your life by the values of J.K. Rowling, that doesn't mean that you don't think there's a sentence in it that you could live without. And the Yerushalmi, and Rashi quotes it, he says, you know what, none of this is enough to fully encapsulate what the Torah is. It's not enough to say the Torah tells you how to treat other people. It's not even enough to tell you it tells you how to live your life. It's not even enough to tell you that without the Torah you wouldn't be. Lo davarek whom we can doesn't mean the Torah isn't empty. It means eilecha davarek. There's not a single thing in the Torah which is empty. Right? Now this is a hop, right? Hop, skip, and a jump forward. Right? It's no longer the Torah as a whole is valuable. It's there is nothing which is not valuable. Right, which is a much more radical statement. Yeah.
Doesn't Kabbalah say that the Torah is infinite wisdom?
Perfect. Right. So the I'll skip to it. Right. Because you're right. But
that's Hashem.
Correct. Now the extreme of it is you're right. 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 Everything we've seen until now has focused on the person. Right. It's focused on the person. When we say kilo davarekum mikem, it means that it's not empty for you. It has value for your life. But Rashi has now introduced this whole other world. It's not just enough to say, and this is where I brought the Torah codes before, right? It's not just that the Torah is valuable for you and your reason to live. Kilo davarekum mikem means the Torah has so much more in it than you can possibly penetrate. Right? Now, yes, the extreme of this is Kabbalah, right? The Ramban quotes this and says, the Torah is kulo shem Hashem. Whatever that means. The whole Torah is the name of God. I don't know what that means. But yes, Kabbalists are the extreme of this. Where they believe it's not just that the Torah tells you how to live. That's thinking down here. Right? Meaning up till now, we've sort of slowly expanded it, right? It teaches you a little bit, it gives you reason to live, explains your living, guides your experience, it gives you how it tells you how to think, how to live, how to train people. Right? I thought that was big.
You have to believe in the Torah to believe that.
Correct.
I mean, there are people that...
Oh, for sure. Right?
That live a beautiful life and no Torah whatsoever.
Correct. Right? And that's back to Targum Yonah, where he says, look, if you don't value the Torah, so it's valueless to live to you. But if you value it, suddenly you'll find, right, all these wellsprings of life, of knowledge, of experience. But Rashi quotes this, and he gives an example, that even a pasuk, right, this is the example that Chazal give, I'll say it outside, that the pasuk tells you that the sister of Lotan was Timnah, which, okay, well, why don't you know that the sister of Lotan is not exactly the world's most important character, was Timnah. So Chazal say, well, the reason that you have to know this is because Timnah married into the family of Esav, married Esav's son, Eliphaz, became a concubine to Eliphaz, because she was a chieftain in her nation, but despite that, she wanted to marry into the family of Avram, because it was such a well-respected family that she married into the family. So we had to learn the whole genealogy of Esav's family. So Chazal say, what do you learn from here? That even the things that you think are valueless teach you something important. Right? In this case, they say the importance of the Abrahamic family. You wouldn't have known that. Right? And even the little details, teach you that. And what he's quoting really is a midrash which appears in several places, but I gave it to you here from Midrash Tanayim. And they say it very powerfully. They say as follows: Ki lo da'areku mikam. There's nothing. It's not empty. Ein lecha b'tara afil odachat afil keva. There's not a letter, not a word. The ein tzarchon or pasuk, for sure not a whole verse. She'ein lo kama tamim kama inyanim ukim, which doesn't have reasons and deep levels. Ki lo da'areku mikam. Because it's not empty from you. And then, this is the key for Chazal, the imreku. If you read a pasuk and you think it's empty, right, they play on it. Imreku mikam. Right? They take kilo dava reku mikam, it's not empty. They say, the imreku, and if you do find it empty, it's not the Torah's fault. Mikam. It's because you aren't looking, or you don't understand it. The fishal ikbanantem, o pilpaltem, betaaman kahogen, kiyu chayim, afil dava kalshar batara. Now this becomes very important for Chazal, right? Because Chazal have now said, right, it's not just the Torah has value. He said there's nothing which doesn't have value. And this creates the whole enterprise of Chazal. Right? Chazal, you read any Gemara, right? We learn mitzvah after mitzvah from an extra vav, an extra hey, an extra yud, a mole, a chaser. It's written this way, it's written that way. There are two words in different psukim that are a little bit different. We make a gzeirah shavah, we compare. Right, Chazal, where did they get this notion? From this pasuk.
It's crazy.
But where did they get it from? Because they said, it's not just, when we say the Torah is not empty, we don't just mean it has some value. There's nothing without value.
But when you, not to use the word, I know rank is empty, but superfluous, it seems
correct.
To me makes more sense.
Correct, right,
empty.
Right.
Every word is there for a reason.
Exactly. And that's what James Kogel has come up with this phrase to explain it. He framed it nicely, and then Yaakov Ellman expanded on it. But intent said, "What are Chazal's view of the world? Omnisignificance, right? What's omnisignificance, right? Right? Everything is significant, right? All significance. Omnisignificance constitutes the basic assumption underlying all of rabbinic exegesis. The slightest details of the biblical text have a meaning that is both comprehensible and significant." Nothing in the Bible ought to be explained as the product of chance, or for that matter, as an emphatic or rhetorical form, or anything similar, nor ought its reasons be assigned to the realm of divine unknowables. Every detail is put there to teach something new and important, and is capable of being discovered by careful analysis. Because Chazal added dimension to this, and say it's not just that it's valuable, that it adds value to your life, and it tells you how to live, and it tells you how to think. It's more than that. There is nothing in it that can't teach you something. And from there, you get all of Shas. You get all of... Now, Yaakov Ellman notes in 13, and I won't read it inside, but Yaakov Ellman notes that Chazal say that, but they don't actually go through with their enterprise. I mean, you read Shas, all 2,711 pages, there is a lot of work being done in every vav and every hey and every... But not every word. There are plenty of words that Chazal don't address. And he said, at some level, you know, what is incredible about Chazal's claim that every letter and every word has a significance is that they never finished the task. And after Chazal, no one picked it up for thousands of years. Yaakov Ellman noted that suddenly in the 19th century, when reform started, and suddenly the Torah was under attack, because people were claiming that the Torah was valueless, you see a reinvigoration of Mefarshim who try to sit and figure out, well, what is it that is there in every word to disprove the attacks on Torah. And that's when you suddenly see the Malbim, right? The Malbim is like the king of this, right? Every letter, every word, every... He goes, Pasuk by Pasuk, Ben Tziv does this, Ben Jacob did this, Tzaduk HaKohen, Mashiach Chachma, right? And suddenly in the 19th, 20th century, magically, you see all these commentaries picking up where Chazal left off. But even here, even with this expansion, this jump of Chazal, what are they really saying? Right? In the end of the day, what are they saying? The value of Torah still lies in action. Right? In action. Right? I mean, for all the expansiveness of Chazal, they're still saying the value of Torah is in action. Right? They just are very expansive about it. That there's all these halakha that you can learn from every last vav and hey. But as I said, some people are looking for even more than that. Right? Not only is it ethical, not only is it spiritual, not only is it historical, not only does every single word have something to teach you legally, they want even more. And that's, again, right? We mentioned it with the Kabbalists. They want Torah not only to teach us everything about life, but they want it to embody God's wisdom. Right? They want there to be something in life that is, I'll put it a bit differently, maybe this will help understand what they're getting at. Heschel builds on this a lot. Right? Heschel points out that it's often hard for humanity to understand or feel that there is a God. The moments we become closest to realizing that there's something beyond us, that we really feel it, is when we feel wonder. Right? When we feel wonder, right? It says you see something that's just awesome, awe-inspiring, right? For a moment you feel like there's something beyond you, and you somehow tap into this notion that there's something beyond. Right? You can't put your finger on it, but he says the emotion of wonder was created by God to remind us periodically that there's some things in life we can't explain that are beyond us. I think for a lot of the Mefarshim, the Torah wasn't only a guide to life, but it was also meant to sometimes, and this is, you know, again, I think what the people who like Bible codes are into, sometimes they just want to be wowed. Right? It's not just enough that it tells us everything. Sometimes I just want to remember that there's something that just wows me. Because that reminds me that there's something beyond. Now, the medieval period, they weren't really into Torah codes, but they were into Gematria. The Baal Yad Tosfot in France and Germany were very into Gematria, which is very similar. Right, this notion that if you take the numeric value of a word, it'll teach you something. It's the same kind of idea, it'll wow you. One of the most impressive wow moments that I've ever seen in Gematria is in number 11. Rav Chaim Paltiel is one of the less known Baal Yad Tosfot. He was one of these Gematria people. Right? He wanted to be wowed by the numbers of the Torah. And here's how he wowed himself. Kilo davar reku miken. He said, if you take the words, kilo davar reku miken, it is not empty. In Gematria, the Gematria is Gematria. Right? The Gematria of the words. It is not empty. Right? It's the most self-referential thing I've ever seen. Right? But he wants to be wowed.
Gematria.
Correct. Right, the words, it is not empty to you. The gematria of it is gematria. Right? It's self-referential, right? He's looking for numerical, for justification, that there's value in, hidden in the very numeric secrets of the Torah, and he finds the proof in the numeric value of the very words that tell you there's value in the Torah. Now, again, here we've gone from, if you are keeping track of how much we've expanded, right, we've gone from the Torah is valuable, if you bother to take it as valuable, to people saying, no, it really is valuable, it provides you with a way of life, morally. And then jumping that, well, it provides you more than moral life, it also gives you spiritual life. And then the Rambam saying, it's not just moral and spiritual life, but it also frames your experience. To Chazal saying, not only that, but every single word will add a little bit to your life, because there's hidden halachot. To now reaching Rav Chaim Paltiel saying, you know, it's not only that it gives you things to act, it doesn't even teach you how to think, but it also is there to wow you, it's there to hide secrets. It's there to hide secrets that God put there, just to wow you, just to remind you that He is there, which is what I think Gematria are really about. Right? It's not, I don't love Gematria, it's not my thing, but every so often you're in good Gematria and you're just like, wow, that's very impressive. If Hashem was really hiding something in numerical, then, you know, the numerical value of this word, then it gives you that, as I said from Heschel, that wonder moment. Like, it's not great, it's just wow. And the Baal HaTurim in 12 says, yeah, you get it not even from the words, you get it even from the tongue, and even from the crowns. Right? It's not even the letters, it's not even the words, it's every little crown will do this for you. Now, there were other people. Now, until now, everyone we've seen is basically been building and building and building. And I gave you, I won't read 15 and 16 inside, but the Kabbalists have taken this even farther, right? It's not just that it's there to wow you. Right? It's not just that it's there to teach you what to do. It's not even just there to wow you. But it's actually there because it embodies spiritual secret that in some way have effects on the world that you don't understand. It's not there even for you. It's not even there about you. It's there to affect the world. Right? That's the Kabbalistic idea, right? To give you just, you know, read one of the shorter ones. You look at 16, the Chaim Yafo says, Near the Farsh, you call the Farsh of the Murs Betura, Alufe Seir Chayusen, Him De Lahotzi Nehem, Nitzosu Nakadosha, Chenaflu Beinehem. All these words are there, so you can take out the hidden sparks of holiness that are between them. What does that mean? I don't know. Right? But he's saying it's even more than that. It's not even just there to wow you. It's there because, in some way, the whole fabric of creation depends on this exact construction of letters and spaces and everything. Again, I don't know what that means, but you see where they're coming from philosophically. The last...
Why don't they emphasize more of Gematria?
Some people do. Some people do.
Have you ever taken a class?
Yeah. You know, yeah. it goes in and out of favor. But now the Hamak Davar sort of takes a totally different approach, and he says all this has assumed what values are for Jews. But then he takes a jump, and he says it's actually Moshe is saying something different, which is it's only you who see this value. It's not others. Some people read the Torah, right? Non-Jews might read the Torah also, but they don't, right? I don't know. They read it in translation. They don't understand there's value to the letters. They don't understand what's hidden in it. They see some value. This ability to see the multiple levels is unique to you. He focuses not on rape, not as a Jew, right? So he focuses not on rape, but on Mikan. What I find fascinating about this pasuk, right? And, you know, and what the shir, you know, the point of the shir really is, though, to wrap it up. Is that it's amazing. The Torah tells you, Moshe's final thing is the Torah is valuable. But he doesn't tell you why it's valuable. And therefore, everyone really, what are you really sitting in Parsha doing is everyone's asking themselves, yeah, I think that's what it is, right? All of the Parsha were saying, well, what value should there be in the Torah? And they look at it and they say, well, Moshe said it's valuable. What does that mean? People who suffice and say, look, for something to be valuable, all it needs is to give me, tell me how to live. So then they said, you know what it means? It gives you a way to live. For people who said that all that matters in life is reward, they said, well, the Torah isn't vain, it gives you reward. For people who said, I want social laws, I want to know how to act with other people, they say, well, the Torah must have it. For people who said, I want spiritual laws, I want Chukim, I want God to be telling me something that's beyond moral laws, you got it. The people who said, I want every letter to teach me legal laws, they said, that's what the pasuk means. People who said, it's not enough for the Torah to tell me everything I want to do. I want the Torah to wow me. I want it to hide secrets. So they said, you know what? It's hiding secrets. In this pasuk, it's hiding the secrets. People who are mystics and say, that's not enough. I want the Torah, the letter of the Torah, to hold the world together, to hold the fabric of the cosmos together. That would make something valuable. Then that's what I'm going to say it means. And what's amazing is the Torah doesn't tell you why it's valuable. It tells you the Torah is valuable. What that value is. Why it's valuable. You got to figure out what it is. All that Moshe did when he left, when his final words is, it's not empty. It's your life. What is your life? Depending on what you think your life is about, that's the value you're going to find in the Torah. You want it to be about reward? Fine, the Torah will be a reward. You want it to be about teaching other people? You want it to be engaging other people? Fine, the Torah will teach you that. Whatever it is, this world, the next world, whatever it is.
That's all it is the next world.
Well, also this world, right? They can live in there, you know, survive in there,
that's the next shit.
You know, but it's amazing, right? That what you see in this one pasuk is that everybody looks at it and says, all Moshe told me in his final words is, it's your life. What is my life? He never told you. And each Mefarish said, well, if I had to ask myself the question, what would be the most valuable thing? What would I want the Torah to be? They looked at this pasuk and says, well, that must be what it is. Right? If I want it to be ethical laws, that's what it is. I want it to be spiritual laws, that's what it is. I want it to give me reward, then that's what it is. I want it to hide secrets, so Chaim Paltiel will say, yeah, the Gematria, if you look at the Rei Gumikan, is Gematria. Because that's important, that God hides wisdom, that I understand, even if it has no practical implications. You want it to hold the fabric of the cosmos together? Fine, be a mystic, the Panamira, that's what it does. But it opens the possibility that the godless of the Torah is specifically, it's potentially infinitely valuable, but where that value comes from, what exactly, how exactly is reflected, depends on what we're looking for. And that, I think, really is the key. Moshe's final message is the challenge, is we'll figure out what you're looking for, and you'll find it. Okay.